about. It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
And of course, it's not Denise this week, but Erica. Erica, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, thank you. I'm very well. You've actually, Denise and I get mixed up for each other all the time, and we share an office, so you've kind of got the mirror image of Denise Lee. So you've got as close as you can possibly get without actually having Denise.
Well, I see. I didn't actually realize you guys were so close. Although I have seen a few, I stalk everyone on social media, but I've seen some pictures of you guys like on planes together. It's very cute.
Yes, we're really close. We're really close. We share an office, but we're really good friends as well. And quite often the speaker gets us mixed up in the house because we're always together. So
really?
She's a great woman. Yes, it's happened a lot. And not just the Labour speaker. I think the National Party speaker got us confused once as well.
So wow, you guys are twins.
I'm quite happy to be confused for her. She's a great lady.
Aw, that's so sweet. I'll just jump straight into it after that very lovely comment. But government surplus, of course, this has received quite a bit of criticism from National. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Look, I guess it's kind of a slap in the face for New Zealanders when the government has been sitting on what is a huge pile of cash, while you've got middle New Zealand, well, all of New Zealand, feeling the squeeze with the cost of living that's been skyrocketing. You know, rents have gone through the roof, but petrol taxes that have been imposed on people, while nothing's actually happening. If you're sitting there and you're a Kiwi and you're voting, you're thinking, well, they're taking all of this tax off me, but what's happening? What am I getting for that? DHBs are in massive deficits at the moment, including the Waitemata District Health Board, my District Health Board. For the first year since I can remember, we've done fewer elective surgeries in the last 12 months than we did in the 12 months prior. We've got roads being cancelled all over the place, 15,000 people on a housing waitlist, thousands more people asking for help. You know, you've got all of these things going on in the background. You've got to wonder why Grant Robertson is sitting on this huge pile of cash while Kiwis are out there hurting with a skyrocketing cost of living and not getting anything for the money that they've been forking over to the government.
It's a bit
of an affront.
Surpluses are always a good time for governments to be reevaluating where they need to put their spending, right?
Yeah, well, it's their year of delivery, and what have we had? It's, you know, to be cynical, it's less about the year of delivery and more about the year of election, really, isn't it? Because what this does for Grant Robertson, it lets him have a huge big pile of cash for all his promises for the next 3 years. And what have we seen from the last lot of promises? Not a huge amount. So, you know, Kiwis can't trust these guys when it comes to promises because they've continually broken them. I mean, you look at the Prime Minister. She came in saying, the only reason I got into politics was to reduce child poverty and solve child poverty. Well, 7 of the 9 indicators of child poverty have gone backwards under their watch. So actually, in their year of delivery and all of their grand promises they're not delivering on, not a huge amount is happening. And now to have this huge surplus, it's a slap in the face for New Zealanders.
Well, of course, this is their first 2 years in government, which, I mean, that doesn't really...
So we should go easy on them?
No. But what I mean is this government needs to put in infrastructure, good planning, actual framework before they inject that funding.
Yes, they need to put in infrastructure. You're absolutely right. Infrastructure, you've hit the nail bang on the head. And they've cancelled 12 of the roading projects that were all ready to go because they don't believe in roads. And what have they done with that $1.7 billion of tax they've been collecting from the fuel taxes? Absolutely nothing. They haven't built a single new road in 2 years. You don't need a working group and a fancy plan and 2 years worth of planning to tell you need to build roads to get this country going ahead. But that's what they've done. They've sat there and they've done nothing. And infrastructure is a massive, important, you know, key driver in getting this country moving. And they've done nothing.
Mm. Do you not think it is important for governments to take their time, particularly when it does have its surplus coming out, to figure out where to take that spending next?
Well, I'll tell you something. This government were in opposition for 9 years. Now, they keep throwing that at us, you had 9 years. Well, I tell you what, they had 9 years to come up with some plans and to have a think about what they wanted to do, and they sat there and did nothing. And the opposite to that is what we're doing right now in opposition. And this is, I think you'll find, the busiest opposition in the history of New Zealand. We have got policy documents that will be coming out next year. We're working on discussion documents at the moment. We're working like you would not believe in opposition, so that when we get into government next year, we won't be in the situation where we're like, crikey, that, what do we do? and spend 2 years figuring out with 1,000 working groups, spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on consultants to find out what we should be doing. We're doing that work now. So I'm part of the environment team, and we've put our discussion document was the first cab off the ranks, and that went down really well. In fact, the government has picked up one of our ideas in there, which is the having a bottle return, which they're now implementing. So that's always the danger of these things, that the government pick out the good ideas. But it's important that we sit there and do the hard work, which is clearly what these guys haven't done.
Well, I will have a quick discussion then about something that has been suggested by National. So National considering fining parents of students that drop out. Yeah, that's quite a controversial thing. Why is this something that National is considering?
Well, let's start from the beginning, and that is that this was media speculation and not a policy document. It wasn't a discussion document. That has never been released. It's never been brought to caucus. I've never heard of it. I heard it was reading it in the paper. So it sounds a bit like more like media speculation than anything that's come out. But I think that the broader point around that is we're actually thinking about stuff. We're throwing a whole lot of different ideas out, going, hey, what's going to work? What's not going to work? We are doing the work. We're putting these discussion documents together. That one I've never heard of before, so I can't really discuss it because it's not something we've ever talked about. And certainly in caucus, not something I've ever heard of.
But, I mean, do you have an opinion on this, if it was something to be brought
in? Like I say, the first time I heard of it was when I read about it in the paper, so I haven't discussed it with colleagues. My personal opinion is that if it did get taken to caucus, which I don't know that it will, may have a tough time getting through. My personal opinion is that, you know, we're the party of incentivising parents to do the right thing and businesses to do the right thing. Even when it comes to the environment, we're not about slapping taxes and slapping fines on people. We're the party of incentivising people to do the right thing. So I would find it hard to believe that it would be something that my caucus and certainly I would support.
Interesting. I guess I'll shift on to our last kind of commentary then, since you don't have too much to say about that. That's all right. National's pointing to government soft on crime response as a reason for rising gang membership. What are the policies that you see government implementing or not implementing that is soft on crime?
I think what you've seen is a clear sort of indication from this government that they want to reduce the prison population. They're not building new prisons. They're trying to, get as many people out of prison as they possibly can. They've indicated that they don't want, or they've pretty much told the police, that they don't want them to prosecute people when they find them with drugs. This whole thing that's come into our psyche of, well, actually, these poor people, we need to be nice to them. And what we've seen with that coming into the psyche is that people have gone, well, actually, I'm going to join a gang, I'm going to deal in meth, and you've seen gang membership explode. I mean, it's gone up, 26% overall? I think about 23% in my electorate, and I've seen it firsthand. I've got the Headhunters for the first time in my electorate in Browns Bay, and they, you know, they're peddling their misery and targeting young, vulnerable kids who've probably never seen a gang in their life. And, you know, we've seen an uptick in crime, and no doubt there'll be an uptick in meth sales as well. So they peddle misery and, you know, just horrific behaviour, and we've just got absolutely zero tolerance for them and the misery that they peddle. We've got quite a different approach. This government are, hey, look, if you get caught with drugs, it's okay. Hey, we need to get these offenders out of prison. That's their kind of approach. Our approach is actually gangs need to be cracked down on. We need to make sure they don't have firearms. We need to make sure that, you know, people who are caught with drugs are prosecuted. So that's quite a clear delineation of the two parties right there.
Yeah, well, I'll read out a few policies which government has put out, which seem to be addressing crime. Government has increased frontline police officers by 10%.
Well, let's talk about that one.
Yep.
Before we go any further, the police officers. So they promised 1,800 new cops in 3 years. 1,800. So in 2 years, they have managed to scrape together 700. So they're so far off what they said they were going to do. So it sounds very good. Hey, we've increased frontline cops, which, by the way, National had already implemented, and it was far more than that anyway, but they've only managed to get to 700. So it's actually a massive fail. So Yep, we've seen gang members increase, and potentially it's because these guys have got a soft attitude towards drugs and crime, and actually because they haven't put the amount of frontline cops in that they said they would. And Stuart Nash will fudge that and say, oh, it was just a target, we were just trying to aim for it, this thing we were trying to achieve, but actually that's what they promised, and they are not delivering on it.
In terms of drugs, though, it's being treated as a health issue by this government. So their kind of way of addressing this is an increased emphasis on decreasing demand for drugs supplied by gangs by helping addicts and making sure they're receiving treatment and establishing new treatment services. So it just it doesn't seem to, like, a prison is not the best place for an addict, correct?
Well, I guess the thing is that you have to look at what actually happened. So meth has exploded, it's gotten cheaper, and gang activity has increased. So their policy of going, hey, it's all good, it's fine, it's a health problem, don't worry about it, these are the actual results. It might sound nice to say these things out loud, but actually you've got a dual problem here. Firstly, you've got the gangs going, sweet, we'll increase our numbers and we'll peddle more misery and we'll, you know, the price of meth has actually gone down around the country. And then on the other hand, you've got the government saying, oh, you know, we'll treat them like they've got a health problem. And yeah, you know, but actually, what have they done? They haven't increased addiction services. There's no extra huge amount of funding or anywhere for people to go. I've got them on my books right now in my electorate office, the biggest number of mental health cases I have ever had. Because I worked for Murray McCulley before I had this job for a number of years. We have got so many on the books right now, and they cannot get help. So it's all very well to say, look, you've got a problem, we're going to refer you somewhere. But actually, when there is nowhere to be referred to, or you can't get in, or you're not getting the help that you want, then that's not helping anybody. So, you know, you've got a dual problem. And
I appreciate that response. That doesn't really answer my question in the first place, whether being in prison is the best place for an addict.
You know, I don't think it's not a black or white. It's not like you can't not help people and have stringent rules that people need to live by as well. It's not black or white. It's not like, you know, let's just not send them to prison or look after them in the health system. You can do both. We've got to send a message to people that drugs and gangs and meth is not okay. And if you're caught with something, then you will be prosecuted. But actually, having a health approach at the same time, those things aren't mutually exclusive. We can help people at the same time. I don't think, and certainly it's not working. You can see that it's not working at the moment because all of the indicators are going backwards. So my opinion is we can do both.
We're just running out of time, so I'll just end on my last question, which I always like to ask a personal, non-political, because things can get heated. What's your favorite movie genre?
It's embarrassingly probably some awful sort of rom-com, just to have an escape, to sit there and not have to think about what you're watching. And just,
do you not think rom-com the people in rom-coms are like the worst people ever, though, aren't they?
Of course they are, but it's like the kind of books I tend to read when I'm on a plane as well, but it's mind candy floss, right? It's just I can sit here and watch it, I don't have to think, I don't have to worry about what's happening with the plot. I can just escape for an hour and then get back to reading all my select committee papers and all that, you know.
Brilliant.
Stuff that requires brain power, you know.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Erica. It's been a lovely chat.
Okay, no problem. Nice to talk.
Have a good weekend.
You too. All right. Bye.
Bye.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.